We are happy to welcome to the program the author of a wonderful new book on the great actor Robert Preston. It's called Robert Preston, Forever the Music Man. Deborah Warren joins us. Deborah, thanks for being with us.
Hey, how are you, Rich? I'm happy to join you in this hour of your show today.
Oh, my goodness. I enjoyed this book so much. I'm such a fan of Robert Preston, and it was so great just to learn more about a really incredible life, both on stage, on camera, and in his very interesting personal life.
Yes, a lot of digging to find out all that information, but he certainly led quite a storied life.
What drew you to Robert Preston's story?
Well, it's kind of a convoluted tale, but what happened was maybe some, 38 years ago or so, I had this dream. I actually dreamt a whole screenplay, believe it or not. And it was a movie about a robotics company, and Robert Preston was one of the people that I happened to dream in the movie, along with Pierce Brosnan and all. It was a complete cast. Anyway, I wrote that up as a screenplay, and got an agent, et cetera, and it just never went anywhere. So fast forward to the pandemic, and everybody was kind of looking for things to do and to be occupied, and I was surfing the net and happened to see a Robert Preston fan page or whatever, and saw that people were saying, gee, there's not a whole lot of information about him. And of course, I'm the type of person that always writes the challenge and said, well, let me see what I can find out. So I started digging and digging and digging, and eventually started compiling information and said, I better start writing this down. I can as I went, 10 pages, 50 pages, 100 pages, and that's kind of how the book started. So I am an old movie buff, but I wanted to be creative and stay motivated during the COVID lockdown, and so that's kind of how the whole project started. I am an old movie buff. I, did like Robert Preston movies along with many, many other old Hollywood movies, but that's how the project started, and I'm really happy that I did it and was able to dig into his life and give information to his fans or just people who are fans of old Broadway and old Hollywood movies as well.
I clearly need to have more productive dreams.
It was crazy. I dreamt the whole movie. And so when I woke up, I just wrote the whole thing down. I've never had that happen before since, but that's what happened. And that's kind of started off the whole Robert Preston thing. I had seen him in, various movies at the time, I think SOB or things like that. And so all of a sudden, here's this screenplay that came out of it, and then, like I said, many years later, I ended up doing some research on his life.
And I never knew, as big a fan as I was, I never knew about not only his New England roots, but a pretty deep New England and Canadian roots in his family.
Yes, most of the family on his father's side, and the mother's too, many of the relatives had come over from Canada. He was French and Irish, Scottish by heritage, but most of his relatives had come over and settled first in Canada and then emigrated into the United States and into Massachusetts, actually. So a little suburb, maybe 10, 15 miles outside of Boston, Newton and Newton Highlands, Massachusetts. And so he would frequently travel back there to see his one grandmother who was there on the mother's side, on the father's side, excuse me, and he had cousins and relatives and whatever. So he was very familiar with that area of the country.
So how did he get from a Newton, Massachusetts to his start at the Pasadena Playhouse?
Well, it all started when he was about 2 years old. He had his maternal grandmother was, I describe her kind of as a hammer in a velvet glove, and she insisted that her whole family move west. Her husband had tuberculosis, and so all of her children, including Robert Preston's mother and father, everybody moved west into this big, huge home that she purchased in a very bad neighborhood of Los Angeles. And so that's how he ended up in L.A., in the L.A. area. And his mother noticed that, you know, he had a huge imagination as a child, and she worked for a record store in Los Angeles and kind of had the ear of all these movie executives and TV radio executives, things of that nature. And so she was able to kind of promote her son whenever there was an opening, either in vaudeville or, you know, local plays or productions. And that's kind of how he started. And then eventually ended up acting in high school. And from there, went to the Pasadena Playhouse, where he was then discovered by Paramount.
And it seems from the book that from there, right until the very end of his career, when it came to his professional life, it looks like you could not have had a better colleague than Robert Preston.
Yes, I was... You know, I interviewed several people for the book. Some of his co-stars, there's not too many that are still alive or in good health, but those that I did and those biographies and memoirs that I was able to read from those people who are deceased, no one had a bad word to say about him. He was a consummate professional. He was, you know, flexible when it came to directors and what they wanted. And many people described him as a dream to work with, and he was kind of the energy that and the glue that kept a lot of the cast together, whether it was on Broadway or if it was on a movie set. He, you know, his charisma and his flexibility just kind of was the, like I said, the glue that kept everybody together. And I didn't find anybody who had a bad word to say about him. There was just nothing but praise and admiration for him, which is unusual a lot of the times in Hollywood or on Broadway, because, you know, as you read even in the modern tabloids, there's always somebody having something to say about a celebrity. But no, he just, that was the interesting thing about him, is that he garnered praise with everybody.
Well, he was a good-looking, obviously a talented guy, and he found work right away in movies, although it wasn't the work he wanted. You refer to it as the B train. He could get lead roles in B movies, but in the big pictures, he was always going to be the second or third guy.
Right, and he was extremely frustrated by that, and that's sort of what led to the initial separation with his wife. Back around 1951, is that, you know, he was being featured in all of these B movies, as you mentioned, and his all of his reviews were actually outstanding for his roles in these B movies, but he just was unsatisfied, and so he made the decision to fly east. His wife, Catherine, wasn't on board with that. You know, she felt that he was, you know, doing well in Hollywood, et cetera, and possibly hoping for him to get a big break at some point. But he realized that if he hadn't reached the A-level status at that point doing what he was doing, it was never going to happen. So he decided to be his own catalyst in changing his luck, and he went to Broadway, Jose Ferrer actually gave him his big break by filling in for him on the 20th Century, the play that was on Broadway at the time. And that kind of, I describe in the book, that's when he got Broadway fever. Mm. And he decided that, you know, his first love was, he cut his teeth sort of on the stage with the Pasadena Playhouse. So acting in front of a live audience was something that he actually preferred. So the move to Broadway actually fit in with his background and the things that he enjoyed doing anyway.
And did a lot of live TV at the same time.
He did. And that was kind of particularly interesting. You know, in those days when he first started in the 50s and early 60s, most of the TV was live. So today, you know, you can have several takes and retakes of a scene, and they splice it together, and you have a show. In those days, you know, if it was an hour production, you were live for that hour, and you had to know all your lines. You had to know your cues, where to stand, where your marks were, et cetera, and not trip over all the cables and all the things that were they were in the background filming you. And it was really funny. Angela Lansbury had said in one of her interviews that, you know, a lot of people took to drinking once they were doing these TV theater shows because it was grueling. You had maybe a week to rehearse the whole hour of dialogue, and you had to get it right. There was none of this flubbing or retaking. You had to be flawless doing those programs, and it was a lot of stress and a lot of pressure. But he did it. He was able to do it and got wonderful reviews for all of the various shows that he did.
We're talking with Deborah Warren about her book, Robert Preston, Forever the Music Man. And it was that Broadway work that led him to the role that became his signature role in Meredith Willson's Music Man. Smash hit, tremendously big, big hit on Broadway. For a guy that, as you point out, was not trained as either a singer or a dancer.
Right. You know, if you look at the history of the Music Man and the casting for that particular role of Harold Hill, the producer and the director kind of struggled with trying to find someone to fill that role. And they were looking for song and dance men who were on Broadway or Hollywood at the time, you know, Danny Kaye or Ray Bolger. And for various reasons, none of those people worked out, and they were getting really frustrated. So they finally decided, you know, maybe we just need to get an actor and we can train him to sing and dance. Boy, that was a big shoes to fill, but that was what they decided to do. And Kermit Bloomgarden had seen Preston in one of the shows he did in Philadelphia and made the recommendation that maybe he should get an audition. And, you know, Preston was a perfectionist. He took the most difficult song in the show, You Got Trouble, and he perfected it, auditioned in front of Bloomgarden and the director, Morton DeCosta, and then interviewed, auditioned for Meredith Willson, and was hired on the spot. So, that's his signature role. You know, every time he would come out on stage or an award show, whatever, he would always be played on by 76 Trombones. That became his signature song for the role of Harold Hill. And, it defined him. I mean, most people, even today, if, you know, you mention the name and they're not quite sure who it is, when you mention the Music Man, their eyes will light up and say, oh, yes, now I know who that is. So he'll be forever defined by that role just because that's kind of what catapulted him into the A-list of celebrities.
Now, you touched on his relationship with his wife, Catherine. They were together for, nearly a half century, and yet there were multiple instances of infidelity on his part. Was that marriage, was it a product of the times, or was there more to it than that?
You know, yes, at the time, at least for the, you know, common folk, you know, divorce wasn't all that common, say, in the 50s or early 60s, although there were, you know, divorce was becoming more increasingly okay among the, you know, general population. But in Hollywood, you know, if you go back and look, I mean, there were many, many divorces. People kind of hopped around from, you know, relationship to relationship and married and divorced. So I don't think that was particularly the issue of, you know, let's not get a divorce, because it was prevalent in Hollywood. But they, you know, despite the straying in the marriage, the two of them had a very strong relationship. Catherine was, you know, completely devoted to him. And despite, like I said, the dalliances with, you know, a couple of his co-stars, he freely admitted that his wife was really the only person with whom he could be his true self and let his hair down and share how he felt about, you know, various people he was working with or productions or his emotions in general. And so he really cherished the relationship with her for that reason, although, you know, other distractions came into play when he was involved with some of these other plays with some of these foreign-born actresses that he was working with, and then previously also with Peggy Lee when he was, in New York earlier on in 1951. But yes, despite that, the two of them stayed together, and he had a very good relationship from all reports, and she was with him and cared for him up until the day he died, which was, they did share a very special bond.
A minor highlight of his career, but it was big to me at the time because I laughed out loud when you brought back memories of being a young boy in physical education classes in elementary school and hearing Chicken Fat.
Yes, that song is just, it's kind of zany and crazy, but Meredith Willson actually wrote that song. At the time, President Kennedy was in office, and his big push was for physical education, and so Wilson took it upon himself to write this song that children could exercise to with a fast tempo, and since Preston was involved with the Music Man, he had asked him to record it, which Preston did free of charge. And so millions of these records were produced and sent out to every elementary, junior high school in the country. And that was the physical education for a lot of kids. They would play this record in the morning or during gym class, and they would, exercise to the song. And it's very catchy. I find myself too, and if I go to the gym and I'm working at, whether I'm on the treadmill or some other device, I'll click on Chicken Fat. Now I'm not doing the exercises on the video, but it's a very quick tune, and if you're trying to exercise at a fast pace, it's fantastic. So I still use it, but I know a lot of the people cringe when they remember Chicken Fat, because that was the song that the schools used for at least a decade to promote exercise and physical fitness among the school children.
The hits continued to be offset by misses during the 1960s and early 70s. We took a little break and had a bit of a comeback doing Junior Bonner, and I was fascinated to read about what a not great colleague Steve McQueen was during that process.
Steve McQueen was a brilliant actor and was one of the top stars, of course, in the 60s and 70s. But he had his own personal demons from his own family background, and so he could often be difficult on the set or with producers, directors, co-stars, etc. And that he certainly didn't disappoint in that area, both with Robert Preston and Ida Lupino, who was playing his mother in the film. He was difficult with both of them, which kind of reflects the relationship he had with his mother and his father. Mm. He was difficult with the actors. It was almost like a catharsis and a projection. He was being difficult with the actors playing his mother and father in this film. And, Robert Preston wasn't kind of privy to all of Steve McQueen's background. And he was just baffled, especially during this one scene where it was a very, emotional father-son scene. And there was one take of that, which was, I guess, sufficient because it ended up in the film. But the director wanted a retake, and McQueen started just babbling nonsense that, instead of his lines, he would come up with all these crazy things that Robert Preston could not, respond to. And when the director finally confronted him and said, what's going on? He said, I'm just not going to say those lines. I'm not going to do it. And it was because that scene and that closeness with another man in a father-son relationship was kind of overwhelming for McQueen, given his own background and estrangement from his own father. And, like I said, Preston wasn't aware of all that at the time, but he just couldn't get over the sequence that he was in with him and all the crazy things that were going on. And the same thing with Ida Lupino. He was being very difficult and not, saying his lines, and she kind of threatened him and said, it was a scene where she was giving him a piece of pie and a glass of milk or something, and she said, you better know your lines tomorrow, or you're going to be eating a hell of a lot of pie, kind of thing. And he was chastised by her, and he did arrive on the set the next day, and in one take did the scene with Ida Lupino. But that was very, very interesting, that whole dynamic with Steve McQueen and the two actors playing his parents.
And a real late career resurgence for Robert Preston when he got together with Blake Edwards for what would become an Oscar-nominated role in Victor Victoria.
Yes, and he originally, you know, was tapped for that role because of his previous work for Blake Edwards in SOB, which was not greatly received by Hollywood and not promoted, just because it attacked Hollywood. But he did a fabulous job as Preston did a fabulous job as the crazy doctor in that film. And he really should have received, I think, an Oscar Academy Award nomination for that role. But because the film itself kind of trashed the film industry, awards weren't given to that film, so he missed out on that. And then because he did so well as the zany doctor in that movie, Blake Edwards tapped him to play Toddy in Victor Victoria. He was actually, I don't want to say the second choice, but Blake Edwards had actually, thought in his mind he wanted Peter Sellers to have the role of Toddy, but in between SOB being made and starting production on Victor Victoria, Peter Sellers tragically died.
Right.
So Edwards had to change gears, and because he realized Preston did such a good job in SOB, he called him up and said, "Hey, here's this role. You're going to be playing this." And I think something to the effect of, "You're going to be playing gay." And Robert Preston said to Edwards, "Okay, yeah, that's fine." And he was just, Edwards, I think, was just marveled at that, because at that time, in the early 80s, it was right around the time when, you know, the AIDS epidemic came out, and it was just like, it was a taboo, homosexuality, being gay was, it wasn't taboo, but it was kind of a new subject. And a lot of the actors, I think, were loath to play some of these roles. And so Preston just didn't have a problem with it. He's like, that's fine with me. He really performed that role flawlessly.
Well, Robert Preston died way too young, but certainly got a lot of accolades at the end of his life. Was he aware how respected he was in the industry?
Kind of not, I would say no, but it was interesting after he was in Victor Victoria, and as you said, he did get a lot of, Lifetime Achievement Awards and all of these awards and recognition. He mentioned to the director of The Music Man, Morton DeCosta, at one point he and his wife had gone to Broadway to see a play, and as they were walking in the theater, the crowd outside, clapped and were giving him accolades, and he was just stunned because that had never happened to him before. So I think, toward the end of his life, when he was receiving all of these awards for his work and lifetime achievement, and also the role as Toddy in Victor Victoria, he came to understand just how much he was appreciated, but it was, toward the tail end of his life, which, as you mentioned, was kind of cut short by cancer.
Well, it is a wonderful read about a remarkable talent, Robert Preston, forever the Music Man. Deborah Warren, it's been wonderful to talk with you. Thank you so much for being with us this afternoon. And listen, I hope you have dreams that lead to more wonderful works down the road.
Yes, and thank you so much for the opportunity to speak with you. I greatly appreciate it. And wouldn't that be wonderful to have, another feature film be dreamt? That would be wonderful. Well, thank you so very much.
Thank you for being with us, Deborah. Deborah Warren, Robert Preston, Forever the Music Man.